This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Now, if you hear about symptoms like dizziness, chest pain, and shortness of breath, many people may very easily brush them off and ignore them, especially among older people. They may think it's normal as you're getting older, or some of us may even think, oh, this has something to do with COVID-19 or some post-COVID problems, as we've been hearing a lot about lately as well. But here's something that we all need to pay attention to. These are symptoms that could be warning signs of a condition called aortic stenosis, and that's a problem affecting the valve in our heart's aorta. So to explain more about this condition, joining me today via Zoom, Dr. Shaiful Azmi Yahya, Senior Consultant Cardiologist from Institut Jantung Negara. And we're going to find out why it's important to treat aortic stenosis with the appropriate methods as well. And this show is brought to you by Edwards Life Sciences for patient and public awareness. Good afternoon, Dr. Shaiful. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Xiaoyik. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So if you have questions for Dr. Shaiful about aortic stenosis, or if you've been experiencing some symptoms, or if you do have some history of heart disease in your family and you have some concerns, the number to call, 03-7733-2900, to get your questions clarified. Or you can also WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dato Shaiful, I think a quick refresher first on what our heart's valves are and why they're important in our heart's function.
Thank you, Shaiq. Now, the heart has four valves, and two are on the left side of the valve of the heart and two on the right side. Now, the left side of the heart brings blood to the most important organ, the brain, the kidney, the body, the gut, and everything, whereby the right side goes to the lungs. So you see that the amount of blood that's being pumped to the left side of the body is much, much more. And the pressure is also high. Yeah. If you look in a normal adult, perhaps we're talking about blood pressure of 140 millimeter mercury on the left side. On the right side, it only supplies to the lung, which is about 20-30 millimeter mercury. So now I can tell you that the left side of the heart is important. Therefore, the valves are important in order to bring the blood to go through one way.
I see. All right. And, we do have our podcast from last week's show where we did speak at great length about the different valves and we had time to go into more detail on that. So you can search for that podcast by looking up heart valves on our website or on our app to catch that if you missed it. But, so there are four different valves, left and right. And today we want to talk about the condition called aortic stenosis. So I assume there's a valve that's specific, specifically related to that condition. Am I right?
You're right. So the valve that we are going to talk about today is the aortic valve, which is the valve that comes out from the heart, and outside of the heart will be the aorta or the main artery. The valve acts as a control for which blood that goes out will not be able to come back into the heart chamber. In fact, it will go on continuously as the heart continues to pump in one way. So like I mentioned just now, the pressure that goes through this valve are enormous. You know, it's 140 millimeter mercury for us in general. Perhaps in the younger age group is a slightly lower pressure, but in the elder, the pressure might be higher than the 140 that I've mentioned.
Mm. And so the aorta, as the main artery, is where the blood leaves the heart and needs to travel to the rest of the body. I presume it's probably larger than the rest of the arteries supplying out of the heart, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Mm. So what could go wrong with the valve?
No. For the valve to function normally, it allows blood to flow with a size of about 2.5 to 4 centimeters square. That is a normal person's area of the valve when it opens. Now, when it closes completely to not allow blood from regurgitating into your ventricle, into the heart again. Now, whenever there is problem like aortic stenosis, the valve gets narrowed. Now, there are many kind of diseases that can cause this. The easiest one, or the I would say one which we find commonly, are the bicuspid aortic valve, which comes in as a congenital illness. The valve is usually tri-leaflet. There are three leaflets of the valve when it opens, like a Mercedes-Benz kind of thing. When it opens up and then it closes up like a Mercedes-Benz. But in some of these congenital conditions, the valve are actually only bi-leaflet. It's only two leaflet. And that may not be able to last very long like the natural tri-leaflet valve. So in this kind of patients, if they have this bi-leaflet valve from young, they generally present with narrowing of the valve at the age of 40, 50, or 60 years old. Some of them may present much later, but generally they are slightly younger than the degenerative ones. So in the patients who have a tri-leaflet valve, we normally can use it for many years during our lifetime. But when you reach certain age, the leaflet also becomes, you know, overused, it becomes degenerative, it gets sticky to each other leaflets, and the area that opens up for the blood to go by will be smaller. And anything which is less than 1 cm² will be considered as severe aortic stenosis.
Okay, and stenosis means narrowing, is that right?
Correct, narrowing. Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, you know, if you could draw that picture for our listeners, right? And I, you know, the way you explain it, these leaflets that enable the valve to open and then it close back must be actually so thin and so fragile.
Exactly. I know, I'm not a surgeon. Dr. Jeswan on the previous week probably would be a better person to say this. But I would say it's slightly thicker than a paper sheet that you are having on your desk, your books, you know. It's slightly thicker than that, but that's it, you know. And imagine for a person, if you live until 80, 90, or even 100 years, the thing is still functioning. That shows that how great the, you know, this thing has been made for us.
Absolutely. But, you know, over time, the amount of blood that's being pumped through it, it's opening, closing constantly. So, you know, what you've described is eventually the valve will wear down and there will be degeneration or damage to it. So how does the narrowing then occur? And then what happens? How does that ideal picture of the blood being able to be pushed out to the rest of the body, how does that picture change when the valve becomes narrowed?
Interesting question, Shoik. Now that the heart, when it pumps, a large amount of blood will go out through the valve if it opens normally. If there is narrowing because of these I would say narrowing of the valve due to the commissures sticking to each other. So the narrowing will be now smaller. Anything which is smaller than 1 cm² will be considered as severe stenosis. And you can imagine the amount of energy that the heart needs to pump out through a little hole. Imagine yourself being in a room which with a large door, and 50 people can go out through the large door within a couple of seconds. And now imagine the door is not going to open fully, it's only to open on one part of the door, and people will be, you know, pushing everybody out through that little hole. Similarly, in the heart, if you have a narrowed valve, the heart has to push further for that amount of blood can go through. And that doesn't only cause problem to the heart, it causes problem to the flow as well, because it's going to be a jet flow outside. And in the end of the day, the heart becomes weak, it can get thickened, and finally it becomes dilated, and the patient may present with heart failure.
Could this eventually lead to death?
Yes, it does. In fact, this is one of the common cause of death in the very elderly with whom has not been detected to have, you know, aortic stenosis. Mm. It could be left undetected if we do not check them.
Mm. Are the elderly or the older adults those who most commonly present with aortic stenosis?
Yes, it does, because it is considered a degenerative disease. It means that we have used it for many years that it became, you know, smaller and smaller. Our usual group of patients that we see having this condition will be in the range of 60 onwards. And the common one will be 70 and 80-year-olds. We do have those who are 90-year-olds with this as well.
Mm, but so that means you can't really prevent this condition from developing, right, as you grow older?
Well, I wouldn't say luck, but some people live very well into their elder age group, but some do have this earlier. So it's important for us to have a, you know, consultation if there's anything wrong with us.
Mm. So consultation, but first, you know, what are the signs that people would look out for? I listed a few at the beginning of the show, but, you know, if you could elaborate, what are some red flags that people, especially those who are growing older, those above 60, what kind of symptoms should they look out for?
The most of the patients who have mild aortic stenosis will pass without any much symptoms. They will not feel anything, or maybe they will say that I'm getting older, therefore I'm getting slower, this and that, I'm getting a bit breathless, and people will, you know, always blame it on the age and inactivity. But once the narrowing becomes more, the symptoms that are usual, that are usually being complained of would be chest pain and breathlessness and even a syncopal attack or fainting attacks. So I think they will feel like chest tightness. They will feel like something, you know, preventing them from being able to breathe in fully. So those are the symptoms that may happen in them.
Would they be experiencing these symptoms all the time, do you think? Or would they perhaps be intermittent, come on suddenly and go away?
Like I said, the majority of them do not feel much until the very point that the heart valve becomes severe. So yes, we do have them. And when we ask them these kind of questions, they will go back, oh, maybe doc, I've been having this for the past 3 months or 6 months and they didn't even realize it's that. Until someone sees them and have put a stethoscope on the chest, found a murmur, then only they will agree, yeah, I actually have these symptoms way back.
Mm. So, you know, the problem then is, especially when it's at the mild stage and it's sort of vague and can pass for a lot of other things, right? What is your message to urge them not to brush these symptoms off?
I think the simplest way is to get a medical consult. It is very simply done by putting the stethoscope on the area where the valve is. And if there's a narrowing, there will be a flow which is disrupted. And when there's disruption of flow of the blood through the valve, it can be heard as a murmur. A murmur is basically an abnormal sound that goes through the valve. So that's easily picked up by the stethoscope that I'm sure every doctors have. And once we detect such things, we will offer them an ultrasound or echocardiogram to look into it further.
All right, so it's as simple as that, isn't it? And you could even go to your GP, I presume, Datuk Shaiful, to just, get them to do the stethoscope check first. And then, if necessary, I'm sure there will be a referral for the echocardiogram. Let's come back and further discuss how we can address and treat this condition called aortic stenosis. I'm speaking to Datuk Dr. Shaiful Azmi Yahya, Senior Consultant Cardiologist from Institut Jantung Negara, about aortic stenosis. That's when the valve at the aorta, that's the main artery that pumps blood, or where blood travels out of the heart and to the rest of the body. It brings oxygenated blood to your brain, to all your organs. What happens when that valve gets narrowed? So we'll continue this conversation. Do stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. I'm speaking today to Dato Dr. Shaiful Azmi Yahya, Senior Consultant Cardiologist at Institut Jantung Negara. We're discussing aortic stenosis. Do get your questions in. You can call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 if you have any questions about the condition. Dato Shaiful has listed out certain symptoms that you need to be keeping an eye out for. Don't brush them off. Things like chest pain, you feel this tightness around the chest area, dizziness, difficulty breathing, you feel like you can't draw in a full breath. Some people may even experience fainting. And this condition is common among those above 60, especially in the 70 to 80 year old age group, due to, well, just the inevitable process of aging. But what is not inevitable is the complications of heart failure and death, because I'm very sure that Datuk Shaiful is going to explain to us that you can do something to prevent that kind of progression. But just very quickly, Datuk Shaiful, you mentioned that, you know, a simple diagnostic procedure involving listening to the heart with the stethoscope to hear that murmur if the blood is not flowing out of the aorta as it should, followed by a heart ultrasound called an echocardiogram, would definitely give a clearer picture of what the patient is experiencing. Are there certain questions that you would ask patients to get a clearer picture? And perhaps that would help our listeners to know sort of what they can start taking down notes if they've been experiencing any of these symptoms.
Thank you, Sharik. Again, you will not find it if you don't, you are not thinking of it, I would say. Again, many in our population will brush off these things as comes with age. I'm weak because I'm old, that kind of thing. The other symptoms that I've mentioned earlier is angina, syncope, and short of breath. Now, if I can elaborate further on that, whenever someone comes to us with symptoms of aortic stenosis, the one that will last longest will be angina, because based on studies, those who have angina would live a few more years, yeah, if they don't do much about it. But those with shortness of breath are the one which will fare badly, because those are the symptoms of heart failure. In fact, if you don't do anything with that, your timeline will be within 2 years that you'll not make it. So in fact, if you have a severe aortic stenosis, the prognosis is probably even worse than some cancers around. So this is something that we have to look into. And the other one, Xiaoying, is syncope. You know, someone with fainting attacks. In the elderly, fainting attacks can be due to a lot of things. Sometimes even with anti-hypertensive medications, they can feel giddy, they can faint. But in aortic stenosis, the fainting is quite typical, whereby someone was talking to you, sitting down, and suddenly they lost consciousness. And immediately upon waking up, they are fine. You know, it is not a seizure, but rather a heart probably stopping for a couple of seconds that causes them to have this kind of symptom. So those are the common ones that we see.
That sounds terrifying. So it's fainting that's not coming on due to some sort of exertion. They have literally just been doing some normal activity.
Exactly. It is even when at rest, you know, when you're talking to someone and you see them unconscious, those are the things that probably points towards sciatic stenosis.
Mm. Okay. Just switching a little bit because we have a question from our listener who says that she went for a medical checkup and the doctor said that she has reverse flow. So she wants to know what that means.
Thank you for the question. That is a totally different from aortic stenosis. A reverse flow means there is a blood leaking against the flow of the valve. Instead of going out from the left ventricle into the aorta through the valve, it's now reversed where the blood from the aorta goes back into the heart chamber because of incompetent valve. So that's really what a reverse flow is. We call it aortic regurgitation.
All right. Thanks so much for that question. And again, I think you might find our podcast from last week. If you search for heart valves on our website or on our app, you might find that useful for a bit more information on that. But do keep your questions coming in. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or call us 03-7733-2900. So I think the big question, Dato' Shaiful, is what can you do when you've diagnosed somebody with aortic stenosis? How much of it can you fix?
Okay, Shawik, I will bring you back like 10, 15 years ago when we never had anything, transcutaneous procedure being done on our patients. It's either medical therapy or surgery. So those who can go for surgery will get surgery. Those who cannot go for surgery, we will tell them to go home. You know, that's the sad part of being a doctor that back those days, I would say probably in year 2005, 2009, we had our chance on performing this percutaneous method of exchanging the valve, or what we call TAVI, since 2009, and we have done many cases until now. So the options are essentially, again, surgery or percutaneously. Surgery means you have to do an open heart surgery. You have to put the patient on a bypass machine, heart-lung machine, and then you will explant out the old valve and implant a new valve, whether it is a totally mechanical valve or bioprosthetic valve that Dato' Sri Yaswan has mentioned last week. That requires an open heart surgery. Now, the other option that we have since 2009 is TAVI, or transcutaneous aortic valve implantation, TAVI, or the Americans call it TAVR, T-A-V-R, which R stands for replacement. Now, what we do is we identify suitable patients for the TAVI, and we will perform certain tests like a coronary angiogram, echocardiogram, and a CT angiogram of the whole of the aorta, because we need to get the valve in through one of the big vessels, be it the leg or the left subclavian or even the carotid artery. So once we have this valve ready, being crimped on a small catheter, we will then advance it from the leg, place it at where the old aortic valve is, and we will therefore implant the valve, pushing the old valve away and allowing the new valve to function immediately without even stopping the heart. So that's TAVI for you.
I see. So that's a big advantage, isn't it? Without having to stop the heart and put the patient on a heart-lung machine as you would with open heart surgery.
Exactly. In certain countries, those who are doing, many cases of these, they are so good that they can get the patients out of the hospital within the next 1 or 2 days. It's amazing.
Mm. And the procedure of putting in this transcatheter valve itself, how long does that take?
It can take an hour.
Oh, that's
or slightly more than that.
All right. But if we go back a little bit, then you said 10 to 15 years ago, you might have to turn someone away because if they couldn't undergo surgery, there was simply nothing else you could do. But you did mention medical therapy. There's no option for medication somehow to be able to treat aortic stenosis?
Unfortunately, no. If you remember what I mentioned just now about regarding the symptoms, the angina, the chest pain, the syncope, the fainting, and the short of breath. So generally, the patients who do not do anything upon being diagnosed as aortic stenosis will follow this line. Yeah, chest pain, fainting episode, and then failure. The failure are relentless. You know, they cannot lie down. They had to sit up while breathing. They cannot even sleep at night. They have to use their chair to be on, you know, during nighttime, and there'll be leg swelling, and finally the heart shall stop. You know, that's the sad part.
So who wouldn't be suitable for surgery and would now be able to benefit from the alternative of the transcatheter, the TAVI?
When we talk about surgery in the 70, 80-year-old patients, the risks are definitely going to be higher because they also have other comorbidities like hypertension, like coronary artery disease, even diabetes with kidney failure or peripheral artery disease. So these are the things that we commonly find among those who are elderly. Now, when they have that, any problems regarding other organs other than the heart will make it riskier for the surgery to be done. Imagine going for a heart surgery and then you end up with pneumonia, with a chest infection and with renal failure, and you have to, you know, be supported out of the surgery until you're out of ICU. Having said that, in TAVI, for instance, the procedure is short. You know, even though you can do it under general anesthesia, there are some units who does it under local anesthesia or under sedation. So like I mentioned just now, the procedure is only about an hour. So basically you do it in the morning. In the evening, a patient can already, you know, be awakened from the procedure, and they can have their lunch or their dinner. And if everything goes out fine, they can actually go home the next day or the day after that.
Mm. And earlier for surgery, you mentioned there could be a mechanical valve that's put in or a bioprosthetic valve. What about in the case of the transcatheter procedure?
Okay, generally the challenge is on how do you put in a valve, a bioprosthetic valve, to be crimped. You know, when it opens in the aortic position, it will open to maybe 10, I mean, sorry, about 20 or 30 mm size. Now, you have to make it small to enter the artery at the leg. So that's the big challenge. You have to sew the leaflets by using a pericardium lining of cows or even porcine or even pigs. When they have that, they will fashion it nicely so that it is sutured into the leaflet shape. And then we shall trim it, make it as small as possible. And when we put it inside, either by self-expanding or by ballooning, the valve can sit there and perform immediately. So that's the challenge for us. The technology actually makes it very, very expensive.
Are there any risks that you still have to manage when it comes to the TAVI procedure?
Yes, sure. In fact, the risk is there. It's not a procedure, even though I say it can be done under 1 hour, but the risk is still there. It's still considered a high-risk procedure by me. I will always quote a risk of less than 5% for our patients that they might get a heart attack, they might get a heart rupture, they might need open heart surgery emergency during the procedure, and also stroke, not to mention. And there is also a possibility of requiring a pacemaker, a permanent pacemaker after the thing. Now, whenever we do TAVI, we will push the old valve to the side. And as we do that, we may injure some of the structures, namely the nerves that are surrounding it. And we are talking about a 70, 80-year-old heart here. and the nerve are not going to be as normal as a young person. So the nerve might be, you know, degenerative as well. So whenever we push a valve against those walls and the nerves are within the walls, the nerve may get, you know, affected. And as a result, the heart becomes slow and therefore they need a permanent pacemaker after that. It used to be like 20% of them needs that, but I think with the technology going forward, we have been able to bring down our complication rate of a pacemaker to about 10% now.
I see. And what else can you do to, you know, reduce those risks for patients?
Well, the most important is to identify the patient who may get a permanent pacemaker before that. So one of the things that we do to reduce risk would be the implantation technique, which I think will be too technical to be mentioned here. But those are the things that we do, like placing the valve a little bit higher than usual.
Mm. But are there any patients that you deem also not suitable for a TAVI procedure?
Of course. We are concerned about the cost, definitely, because it's expensive. We are concerned about complications, and we are of course concerned about whether this will benefit the patient or not. When we started the program back in 2009, we told ourselves we are not going to do on someone who's not going to make it within 2 years. You see, if we think you're too old, you may not make it within 2 years, we are not going to even consider TAVI for you. So those were the experience we had back in 2009. But as we build our experience, we are doing more and more high-risk patients. But there are still patients like those with a very poor lung, you know, who can't even undergo anesthesia because they cannot wake up and they cannot continue breathe on their own. Those with a history of disabling stroke, for instance, where we think by doing TAVI will not make much difference to the patient. Those with renal failure will be also concerned because of safety issues, because if you go for dialysis 3 times a week and you have an implantable valve inside, you may run the risk of bleeding, you may run the risk of having infection going to the valve. So those are some of the contraindications that we consider.
Okay. But nonetheless, for the other patients for whom the procedure is suitable, what we want to do is also look at what is the outlook for them after they've undergone the procedure. We'll just go for a very quick break and come back to discuss that with Datuk Dr. Shaiful Azmi Yahya, Senior Consultant Cardiologist from Institute Jantung Negara. We are talking about aortic stenosis. We've covered, you know, what it is, how it develops, what are the symptoms, what you can do to treat it. And so then we'll look at life after that, you know, how do you manage it as well and continue to live well. Final call for questions, you can call 03-77-32900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'll be right back on Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik, and my guest, Datuk Dr. Shaiful Azmi Yahya, Senior Consultant Cardiologist from Institute Jantung Negara. We're discussing aortic stenosis. When the blood can't be pumped properly out of your heart due to a narrowing of the aortic valve, that's the valve, you know, serving the main artery that carries blood out of your heart to the rest of your body, what happens? And we've covered a lot of that. You know, you can listen to the podcast if you missed any part of it, because what I'd like to do is move on to the outlook for patients when they've undergone some form of procedure to replace that narrowed stenosed valve. Dr. Shaiful has talked about surgery as being the treatment that used to be done for patients. Up until about 10 to 15 years ago, there was no other alternative, and now there is the transcatheter or transcutaneous aortic valve replacement procedure, which can be suitable for those who can't undergo open heart surgery. But regardless of which procedure you go through, Dr. Shaiful, what's the outlook for patients? How will they improve? And will there are risks of those complications we talked about, like heart failure, actually, you know, go down to zero?
Thank you. Now, After the valve exchange, if you have implanted a new valve, so basically there's nothing for you to worry. Yeah, basically you can live your life as what you had for a normal, when you were normal. Yeah, and comparing to a normal person, the only extra medication that will be probably giving you will be the antiplatelets, the you know, the aspirin or maybe the cholesterol medicine. So once you have cleared the narrowed valve, essentially you can live your life as any other would. You know, it has to be at that age lah. It cannot be, we can't turn you into a younger person, surely. But, you know, it's good. So we have our list of patients that had underwent this. And they are actually happy to be around with their family. And the most important thing is that the recovery is quick. The recovery is rather, you know, almost immediately. Only after a couple of days in the hospital, you can go back, unlike a surgery where you probably need a longer period and longer time for the recovery because you had an open heart surgery. Surely the wounds and all that will be there.
Mm. Are there anything, is there anything that patients can't do though, or perhaps any changes that they need to make to their lifestyle?
None.
Short answer, none. So they none. Really can get back to what they were before the condition developed?
Yes.
Mm. Exactly. Can exercise and get back to, you know, especially if they were active, you know, working individuals?
I'm sure, Shaoik, you are not convinced, are you?
Just want to clarify, because it sounds so miraculous, isn't it?
Yeah. Even, okay, some might ask, hey, wouldn't the metal detector detect this kind of thing? Yeah, it wouldn't, because it's either cobalt chromium or a stainless steel or a nitinol, I would say nitinol, nickel and titanium frame. That's very light, that's put at the aortic area. It's even smaller than the pacemaker in terms of the metal weight that we put into the patient. So the other thing, pericardium, you see, the valve are made of porcine or bovine pericardium. So it's basically skin. So, you know, it's a frame with a new valve on it, and it functions like a normal valve.
Mm, all right. And so, you know, I think the message that you are sending is basically when you can, you know, put in this intervention for the right patient, you can, well, you're not turning back the clock on their age, obviously, but you're turning back the clock on their heart function before the aortic stenosis started to give them problems. And that's a really, really promising message. So perhaps then what we can do is leave our listeners with something actionable that they can do right now. Let's talk about how they can identify and do something about any potential signs of aortic stenosis as early as possible. Perhaps, you know, should we be considering going for or taking our older parents for some sort of regular heart screening to identify this?
Agree. I totally agree with this. When you are 60 and above, you should get your medical checks regularly. In fact, we would recommend anybody for at the age of 40 and above to actually go for a medical checkup every year. But I know many of us don't do this. But at least, you know, before they retire, they should get at least one medical checkup, and then yearly for that reason. I think this will help detect this condition much, much earlier and to prevent the condition from getting worse. It's good to have a screening because once we detect, let's say, a mild aortic stenosis, we normally will call the patient again in a year's time to repeat the echocardiogram to see the progression. If you have a mild aortic stenosis, it might take years before you become moderate, and again a couple of years before you become severe. What we don't want to happen is for the patient to present at a very severe stage whereby the heart is already failing, and whatever intervention you do may not benefit them. So I think to check early is good, to monitor their progression is good, and once they arrive into the severe aortic stenosis form, they should be treated immediately.
Absolutely. So again, that message obviously is ideal if you're above the age of 40 to go for an annual medical checkup. But, you know, if you're feeling a little complacent about that, you definitely don't want to be doing that when you reach the age of 60. That an annual medical checkup will definitely pick up early signs of aortic stenosis. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with me today. Dato Dr. Shaiful Azmi Yahya, Senior Consultant Cardiologist from Institut Jantung Negara. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.